And good morning on this beautiful Friday morning. It's Rod McClure here at Braidwood FM. And in a moment, we'll be speaking with one of our local pharmacists, Kayla Ferguson, and we'll be talking about the changes that appear to be coming in regarding pharmacies and doctors and all that sort of stuff, and finding out just what Kayla's view is about that. But before we do, a message from the people who make our little radio station possible.
Braidwood Butchery. High quality meats and old fashioned friendly service. And they also smoke all their own deli range on the premises and are open 5.5 days a week. Braidwood Butchery, 137 Wallace Street, Braidwood, 4842 2472. A proud sponsor of Braidwood FM.
Braidwood Veterinary Surgery has been providing high-quality veterinary services to Braidwood and the surrounds since 1989. Their veterinarians have extensive knowledge of preventative and diagnostic health of all species, no matter how large or small. They're open Monday to Friday, 9 till 5, and Saturdays, 9 till noon. You can call them on 48 42 2697, a proud sponsor of Braidwood FM 88.9.
Looking for a building carpentry company for minor home refurbishments, commercial factory maintenance, farm infrastructure such as stables, yards and arenas?
Then call Peter at ECP, the experienced construction professionals with over 30 years of commercial and residential works throughout New South Wales.
Braidwood based and now servicing the coast of Canberra, Goulburn and Nowra.
Contact Peter for a chat about your next project on 0410 698 734.
ECP, a proud sponsor of Braidwood FM 88.9.
We know healthy soils make healthy trees, and Lantasia Organic Compost has a recognised role in helping new tree plantings thrive. As a multi-generational investment, a tree merits a little extra care and cost at the start of its life to yield untold benefit once it's off to a good start. The ACT National Capital Authority, the Sustainable Gardener, and many other landscape contractors in our region choose Lantasia Organic Compost as part of their soil preparations, to introduce a high-quality, humus-rich microbial compost under and around high-value plantings. If you want to ensure the best start for your projects, add this living compost around your trees or in your garden beds. Contact their Farmgate team at Maloon Creek for bulk deliveries. They also sell 20-litre bags through their stockists. Give them a call or find a stockist on their website at lantasiacompost.com. You can follow Lantasia Organic Compost on Facebook or Instagram. Lantasia Organic Farms is a proud sponsor of Braidwood FM.
And I'm back with Kayla. And thank you to our sponsors who, as I said, help make our little station possible. Kayla, well, thank you for coming in today.
Thank you for having us, and thank you, Braidwood FM, for giving us the platform to chat about these important changes.
Oh, that's our pleasure. I thought it's always nice to know something about the person that you're interviewing. Kayla, why did you become a pharmacist?
I first fell in love with pharmacy when I started working in a pharmacy in year 11 when I was 16. And I didn't really know much about pharmacy before that, but I discovered that it was a place where you could have a real impact on people's health outcomes and help change their lives, as well as being able to develop relationships with the people that come into your pharmacy and have that good rapport with them that means that you know their family, you know their children, you've seen them grow up. That's just really nice and gives us a lot of warm fuzzies as a pharmacist.
Okay, well, let's get down to business. The changes are fairly dramatic. Many people would have seen the post that yourself and Natasha put up. I suppose the starting point is there's a couple of things that people have asked you and you might want to address on air. The whole purpose of this, according to the government, is to save money, where cost of living at the moment is pretty hard on people. Will people actually save money?
So I just want to start by saying that we completely support making medicines more affordable. We are all feeling the increased cost of living at the moment, and we are seeing people who are choosing which prescriptions to fill because they can't afford to fill all of them. So right, hands down, we definitely need more affordable medicines. But this policy won't actually save money for all Australians. There will be some people who benefit from this policy, but it may not be our most vulnerable populations and the people who really need that cost relief at the moment in this cost of living crisis.
In putting it in a nutshell, the heart of this change is that a doctor can prescribe 2 months' medication at a time, and you can actually fill out 2 months' medication at a time. What are some of the inherent risks that you as a pharmacist see in that?
There's quite a lot of risks. We're quite concerned about patient safety and also medicine shortages as a result of this policy. There are 300 molecules identified that will be eligible for 60-day dispensing, and that equates to roughly about 1,700 products because there's different strengths of medications and different combinations of medications. What we're worried about is that some people will only come in to see their pharmacist once a month, and that's the only touch point they have with the healthcare system that entire month. Now we're saying we're going to spread that out to 60 days, and things are going to get missed. That early intervention that's the goal of the entire healthcare system is going to fall away because there's going to be less touch points for the patient with the healthcare system, with community pharmacy, but also with their GPs, because a big motivator for this policy is to reduce the number of times a patient has to see a GP, because that will provide cost relief, but at what cost to their health?
Okay. It's no secret that rural areas, whenever there's a major change, tend to get dudded. And there's no question, I don't think there's anyone in the town who would say that we don't have a wonderful community pharmacy. What impact do you think this particular change will have on regional pharmacies, as opposed to the big, you know, I mean, you could walk down any urban street in Sydney or even a big regional centre and find a pharmacist. We're lucky to have one here.
We are lucky to have one here, and rural and regional Australia are going to be most hard hit by these changes. Your community pharmacies in rural and regional areas are very small businesses. We're a small business. We have 8 to 10 employees, if you include ourselves as employees. And the cut to our bottom line based on this policy will cost wages, and that is a massive concern for us. And Tash and I have had many a sleepless night over the last couple of weeks as we try to work out how we can continue to deliver the service that we currently do in terms of COVID vaccinations, flu vaccinations, sleep apnea services, home deliveries, Webster packs, with this reduced income, and how we can make that up without just putting up the price of everything. That's something that's been thrown around. Why don't you just put up the price of everything? Well, that's not helping the cost of living crisis either, and that's making people worse off based on these changes. So the financial impact of a policy such as this is large, and on a small business in a rural and regional area, that is enormous and will have ramifications for the community.
Okay. And Carla, people have been asking you, and as, you know, an older person who... You know, I have my fair share. As you get older, you get things go wrong with you, and my wife is the same. Will you still reach the safety net?
Probably not. So anyone who reaches the safety net in June or later won't reach the safety net under this new policy. And sure, they'll be spending the same amount of money potentially over the year instead of just over 6 months. But the benefit of the safety net is when you reach it in June and then in August you get a chest infection and you need to get antibiotics, those antibiotics then fall under the safety net and you don't have to pay for those. That won't happen under this policy. Any of those extra incidental medicines and prescriptions that you'll need over the course of the year, there'll be no savings on those, and they're not included in the 60-day policy, so you're still paying the same amount for those, regardless of being on the safety net or not, which you're unlikely to reach.
So even though you're paying the same amount of money, you're not going to be able to get the benefit of the safety net.
That's exactly right, for all those incidental medicines.
Okay. The supply chain issue is a big issue. I have personal friends who have needed medicines. Now, this has been an issue before this particular change came in, and ain't globalisation just wonderful? We used to produce a lot of medicines ourselves, but we import many of them now from India, I think, in the main, but other places too. How will the supply chain cope, And I'll presage this by saying I know that Capital Chemists, for example, have buyers who do a pretty good job, I think, overturning every tin in the world to find medicines that are needed. How will the supply chain cope?
We're really worried about this. We obviously don't know until the policy comes into play. But what we can say at the moment is that at the beginning of COVID, the government said, everyone go out and get an extra box of medicine so you don't need to leave your home.
Right.
We are still feeling the effects of that today, 3 years later. And there are over 400 medicines that are currently out of stock, as listed on the government website, that we can't buy. And it's not as simple as saying the suppliers need to hold more stock, because there is no stock for them to hold.
Right.
As you mentioned, we don't have any local manufacture of prescription medicines in Australia, so we're relying on global markets. And they're under strain too. This is not a situation unique to Australia. It is a global issue. But we fear that it's going to get significantly worse if we're all of a sudden doubling the supply that we're giving to people. And we're talking medicines that are pretty important. So as you said, at Capital Chemist, we're very lucky because we have a pharmacist at head office, shout out to Chris, who his full-time job is sourcing medicine for all of the Capital Chemists. So he scours wholesalers to find different brands, different suppliers. He sometimes imports from different places so that we have medicine on our shelves. And that's been really good for us, but it's almost like we've done that too well, that we've insulated the public from the actual true extent of the medicine shortages and how that will look when this policy comes into play. At the moment, we have wait lists in the pharmacy for people waiting for some medicines to come in. We've got a type 2 diabetes medicine that people are constantly on a wait list for. They sometimes get one every 3 months and then they go another 2 months without getting it again. That's been going on for 12 months. We have a critical shortage of warfarin, which is a very important medicine used to prevent blood clots.
Yes.
We don't know when that's coming back. So these kinds of things are very dire already, and we don't know how that's going to get worse. We're really scared about that. And the fact is there won't be alternatives because everything will be under duress, and we won't just be able to say, oh, we'll just ring your GP and see if this alternative is okay that we can source, because there won't be any alternatives. The thought of not being able to supply people is incredibly upsetting. As I said at the start, one of the reasons I like being a pharmacist is because I can have a positive impact on people's health outcomes. Not being able to supply their prescription medicines is not having a positive health impact, and that's going to be really distressing for us as a community pharmacy to be constantly saying to people, I'm sorry, we can't fill your script. I'm sorry, we can't fill your script. We don't know when we're going to be able to.
Okay. Will all medicines be 60-day supply?
No. So if you take 6 or 7 medicines a month, or if, you know, as a husband and wife couple, you take 6 or 7 medicines a month, not all of them will be 60-day supply. So you're not saving on all of those medicines. There'll be savings on some of them. But that also means that you're not reducing your visits to the pharmacy necessarily, because some you'll get 60 days, some you'll only get 30 days. So then you'll have to go back to the pharmacy in 30 days anyway. The other point on there is that the doctors will have discretion. So they will be able to say, actually, I'm only going to write you a 30-day script, which then doesn't pass on any savings to you. But they will have good reasons for doing that in terms of safety or stability of your health condition. One of the things that really upsets me is that our most vulnerable populations, our mental health populations, they are unlikely to receive scripts for 60 days because by its nature, mental health can be a bit unstable. And so they're not getting any savings. They're still paying the one single copay for a 30 days worth of medicine versus someone who has chronic high cholesterol, who's paying $7.30 for 60 days medicine. So there's a big disparity there as well, in that we're saying, okay, well, here's a saving for some health conditions, but not a saving across the board for all health conditions.
The government have said that they're going to plough a considerable amount of money back into community pharmacies, and I would imagine they would be aware of the situation in the regions. Some $400 million, can that make a difference?
At the moment, what we've seen, it won't make a difference. So we were very hopeful that come budget, we would get some real information about how that money was going to be reinvested and how that would help us fill the hole left by 60-day dispensing. Unfortunately, the policies announced on Tuesday night as part of the budget is all just a shuffling of funding. So it's money that we're already receiving that they're taking from one bucket and giving in another bucket. So it's not actually impacting that hole that we've received. For example, we do vaccinations. We've vaccinated a lot of the town. At the moment, we provide the flu vaccine for over 65-year-olds. That vaccine is provided free for us as part of the National Immunisation Program, but we aren't paid any administration fee. So our patients pay $20 to receive that vaccination. Under one of their reinvestment policies announced on Tuesday night as part of the budget is that they will fund the National Immunisation Program. So that sounds like a great win, and we are glad that that will be funded by the government and the patients won't have to pay $20. However, they'll only be paying us $19. So that's money that we're already receiving from the patient that the government is going to be paying, so a cost relief for the patient, but doesn't impact any of that money that I've lost through the 60-day dispensing because I was already getting that money. In fact, it'll be slightly less than what the patient was paying me. That's just one example out of about five of the policies. The net benefit for our pharmacy, Capital Chemist Braidwood, under the budget announcements for reinvestment, we think will be about $1,000 or $2,000, which is not much in the scheme of things. So we're hoping that there'll be more, but so far what they've announced does total the savings. So they said they were going to have a $1.2 billion savings from this measure that's been pulled out of community pharmacy. The policies they've announced total $1.2 billion. So we're not sure if there's going to be any additional funding that will help fill that gap left by the $1.2 billion.
Is the fear that because of this change, pharmacies will fold?
Absolutely. In the UK, they did this and 1,000 pharmacies have closed. Since this change, we only have 6,000 pharmacies in Australia. And the fear is that it'll be rural and remote areas that lose their community pharmacies because they're already small businesses at risk. The modelling suggests that there's about 10% of pharmacies that barely break even at the moment. And they're mostly made up by rural and remote communities. I don't know how they'll survive. I would be very terrified if I was them.
Right. There's been quite a change. Like, the core business of a pharmacy has not changed in my 68 years. However, there's been lots of changes along the peripheral. You mentioned some of them, the sleep apnea clinic, the giving of vaccinations, the there's talk of in Queensland being able to give certain types of medication, the same here, UTI medication and so on. It seems like a seismic shift for the first time in my lifetime. Do those additional services help offset some of the costs?
They will help, but what we're facing is increased work for less money.
Right.
Which, when you're running a small business, isn't really the way a calculation goes. So, for example, our pharmacy, 70% of our income comes from our dispensary and 30% comes from front of shop and services included. Mm-hmm. So, to make up a 40% loss in the dispensary is a lot of front of shop and a lot of services to make up that gap. We're obviously going to do our best, but we did a calculation, we'd have to do an additional 9,000 vaccinations a year. So, Braidwoodians, I hope you're ready to get many, many vaccinations because we don't have that many people in our community.
No,
so,
I can do the math on that one. poor at mathematics, though I am. The issue of has been brought up of older people, and I can understand this, who have more medication than they're used to having. Is that an issue for the pharmacies? the pharmacists in the sense of care for their client?
Absolutely. We already have an issue with people hoarding prescription medications, and that is dangerous. It's dangerous for elderly people at home who might get a bit confused about which medication is which. It's also dangerous if you have grandchildren visiting the home, and the risk of overdose is high. I had a patient the other day who wanted to start on a Webster pack because they were getting a bit muddled with some medication changes they'd had. So that's great. We can help them out. We said, bring all your medication in from home. They brought in like 2 Woolworths bags full of medication that they had at home. And I had to sort through that, and some of it was expired that I had to discard. Some of it was medication that they're not taking anymore. From what I could tell, they'd ceased it 12 months to 2 years ago, and it's just been hanging around. So we already have that issue. Doubling the amount that people are going to have in their home is only going to worsen that. And I think the risk of medication misadventure is enormous, which is a cost that is going to be paid by the community and by the hospitals when people present having overdosed on medication.
Okay. Some people have alleged that this is the outcome of a rivalry between the AMA and the Pharmacy Guild. Certainly I follow politics pretty closely, so I'm aware that this has gone on for some time. Without getting political, but what is your take on that? I mean, you're all health professionals, and I think both groups would say they care about their patients. Just where do we go from here?
So that's what I would hope. I would hope that we all have the same common outcome of patient care and patient-centered care, and the patient should be at the center of everything that we're doing. I think it's fair to say that general practice wasn't a winner in the budget either.
No.
They had some... they have their own issues that came out in the budget. And I think it's really sad that there does seem to be quite a large cut to primary healthcare across the budget, across GP, general practice, and community pharmacy. And I think we need to unite for the better of our communities and for improved patient outcomes. I don't know how that looks. I'm obviously not the president of either of those lobby groups. But I think there does need to be a more unified approach to achieve patient-centered outcomes, because that's where we seem to have lost our way a little bit. Okay. Across both organisations.
Listeners, I'm going to go a little bit past the news because if Kayla doesn't mind, I think this has been a pretty informative interview. And I again thank Kayla for coming in. There's just a couple of other issues that I think I'd like to discuss with you. One of them is the impact of warehouse pharmacies now, and also online. I recently had a wonderful experience with a government department who want you to do everything online, and whatever you do, don't speak to a human being. Some people are saying, well, go online and get your medicines. Other people are saying, well, you know, if you go over to Majuro, there's a chemist warehouse. What impact have those two things had on pharmacies? And, well, I'll get to the next question after that. What do you think?
So I think the introduction of chemist warehouse in the Australian market caused a shift in pharmacy practice. They are one of our competitors. They're one of our closest pharmacies out here is a chemist warehouse. And that presents challenges in that we simply cannot compete with the prices that they offer on some prescription items. We can't buy it in for the price that they're selling it for. So we'd be selling it at a loss, which is not a viable way of conducting a business. We try to pride ourselves on having a differentiation in the service that we provide. So, for example, I think it's really, and this feeds into the online component as well, when someone starts on a new medication, sometimes they don't know much about it. They don't know how to take it. They don't know the risk. They don't know the side effects and what to look out for. That's a role that pharmacists play. And if you're getting a medicine online, you're not going to get that touch point with a community pharmacist who'll provide you with that information, so that when you go home and you take it and you suddenly get a really bad headache, you're not going to know if that's related to the medication or not. Whereas if you've had that touch point, the pharmacist might have said, look, this medicine might cause you a headache to start with. That should ease over the first 2 days. If it doesn't, go back and see your GP and we'll find something else for you that's better tolerated. I think that is a really important part of community pharmacy practice that is at risk with these warehouse models and online models, because you're losing that touch point. And also a risk with this 60-day dispensing policy, because again, you're losing that touch point of both the GP and the community pharmacist to not be able to get that information about your medications. Medications are actually quite dangerous, and knowing how to manage that is really important. I think it's important to consider while we're thinking about all of this and thinking about safety and thinking about touch points and buying stuff online. The TGA has actually just reduced the pack size of Panadol that's going to be available to buy over the counter.
That's right, yes.
Because they're worried about the risk of overdose. That Panadol is still going to be available. That's, don't need to worry about that. But the maximum amount you can buy over the counter will be 50, and then we'll have some behind the counter that the pharmacist can sell up to 100, the same as what you can buy now. So supply isn't going to change. But the fact that they've reduced that quantity because they're worried about the risk of overdose, while we're saying have more prescription medications, get your prescription medications online with pharmacists who don't know your history, just seems like a bit of a contradiction.
Okay. And as I said, as somebody who takes a number of medications, the instructions or the detail that sometimes comes with a medication can be quite confusing for people. And so what you're saying is that the community pharmacy is aware of you and is aware of your medication, aware of contradictory effects that different medications may have that you will not get from, you know, these more larger online or warehouse organisations. And okay.
It's the same as when we go to a GP. They have our records. When we go to a new GP, we get our records transferred over to a new GP so that they've got our medical history. It's exactly the same. You want your community pharmacy to have your medication history so that they can give you the right information and the right dose and the right medication at the right time to make sure that you don't have any medication misadventure.
Okay. I've heard it said that, you know, the sort of sidelines that pharmacies these days operate in, cosmetics and things like that, you know, that can make up some of the difference. What percentage of your turnover would be that sort of thing?
Tiny. You'll notice we don't have a lot of it in our pharmacy.
I've noticed that.
We have Natio range and we have a more budget makeup range. That's it for cosmetics. And we have some gifts around special occasions. So we have some gifts around Christmas. We have some at the moment for Mother's Day. That's it. I don't know the actual percent of that, but it would be minuscule as a percentage of our turnover.
Single figure,
definitely. And that's because we are trying to position ourselves as a healthcare destination and focusing on those core health lines where we can deliver our health advice and improve your health outcomes. We can't do that by selling you a lipstick. Well, it might help.
No, I don't use it, actually. Moving to another matter, which I think this will resonate with people in the community too. You've expressed concern about your staff. Are you going to have to retrench people?
I really, really hope not, because that's not what I ever thought I would have to do. And that's quite honestly one of my worst nightmares, having to have those difficult conversations. But it is something that we will have to look at. We will have to look at staffing, and it might be that we don't do a recruitment round for a little while all of this stabilizes. And so while our current staff are okay, we are one of the bigger employers in the town. And historically, we have done a recruitment round a couple of times a year. We probably won't be doing one for a little while things stabilize and we see what the impact of this is, because we want to try and avoid having to have those difficult conversations. Tash and I will have a planning day very soon where we will go through every single dollar that comes in and out of the business to see where else we can make cuts that don't impact patient outcomes and don't impact our staff. But at the moment, it terrifies me.
Mm. Yes, it's always a difficult thing to have to do. And I used retrench advisedly. It's an old military term. Again, community pharmacies to this town, terribly important. Have you approached politicians at all?
Absolutely. We have been on the phone and on the emails constantly. I've got a list of senators and MPs that I want to follow up with today because I haven't heard back from them. And now we've heard the budget. We know what those reinvestments look like. Mm. So I want to follow that up. Since this broke, I don't know, I think it was 3 weeks ago now, could be four. It's been a bit of a blur with not a lot of sleep. We have constantly been in contact with them. It's been really disappointing. A lot of the senators have taken their phones off the hook because they don't want to speak to us. I have had a very limited number of replies and they've been very generic replies. And the best reply I've had is actually from Queanbeyan Palarang Regional Council, who probably won't have a huge impact on this kind of policy, but they came to the pharmacy and they had a chat with me about what this looks like and asked me what I thought that they could do to help us and help the other community pharmacies in the regional council area as well. So there's definitely a lot of advocacy happening in the background. We've still got a few months before this comes into effect, and we hope that we can just get a few little adjustments to it so that we can mitigate some of the risks associated with the supply chain and patient safety and the risk of overdose. And we'll work on our financial stuff in the background.
Okay, well, look, Kayla, two final questions. Have you had interaction with people who are saying, well, you know, you've had it good for a long time, come on, what's wrong with you? Has anybody taken that approach with you?
A few, and it really upsets me because I also am feeling the cost of living crisis. I have a mortgage that has doubled in the last few months. Mm. I feel those pressures, and I think it's a bit of a fake belief that pharmacists are rolling and really rich. It's certainly not my experience, and so I find it personally quite upsetting when people come and say that to us. And I think as well, we're one of the only parts of the healthcare system that is a private business that relies on public funding. So that's quite a difficult position to be in as well, and quite a unique position. If you're a hospital, you're funded by the government. Doesn't really matter what you do. GP practices get a lot of incentives for things, so they're in the same boat as us. They rely on public funding, and they, as we've seen in the budget, haven't had any major relief for their concerns. So I think to say that is a bit uneducated and a bit unfair.
Okay. And if people have listened to what you've had to say and feel motivated, regardless of political persuasion, what can they do?
You can do quite a few things. If you come into the pharmacy, we've got a lot of information about who you can contact. We would encourage contacting our local MP, Christy McBain, as well as the New South Wales ALP senators, of which there's four. You can also, there is a petition online that can be signed to say that I've had a good service at community pharmacy before and I would like community pharmacy to continue being able to serve me the way that it has in the past. And that website is medicineshortages.com.au. There's also a template letter on there that you can send to the politicians if that's what you would like to do.
Hmm. Often my experience has been that for many people, template letters are the way they have to go. But if you can write a personal letter, it's often far more effective. The other thing is, has Christy been back in contact with you?
I spoke to Christy a few days after it had been announced. She did call me back, but I haven't been successful in receiving contact from her since then. So she's one of the ones to follow up today.
Okay. And of course, she lives in Bega, which I think it... I know Bega reasonably well. I think it's got two pharmacies, maybe three.
I think it's got two, yeah.
Two, I think.
Yeah.
Well, look, Kayla, I've taken up quite a bit of your time. I hope you found it a pleasant enough experience, even though it's a difficult topic. And I do thank you for coming in. And listeners, I think you've heard what Kayla's had to say. And I think we just have to go from there. Change is always very, very difficult. And change with outcomes that may not be intended is the most difficult change of all. So let's hope that we all keep our chins up and can get through this and come through relatively unscathed and maybe better off.
Maybe better off. There are definitely some policies out there that would help in a more equitable way to ease the cost of living. We hope that we can get some traction on those. And thanks, Rod, for having me on and being able to chat about this. I do appreciate it. And we appreciate all of the support that the town has showed us since our video on Facebook. We have been inundated with people caring about us, which is really nice. And so, yeah, we love our community and we thank you for that.
Okay. Thank you, Kayla.